everybody. 7 past the hour. Welcome to the Molloy Show. If you're watching on video, see, I'm right where you left me last night. Had the same shirt on, same headphones. Oops. Hold on a minute. Forgot to turn the heater off. It is chilly here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, which is where we're broadcasting from. Live from the Daniel Scathen Studio. Hi. Welcome. Glad you could make it. Phone lines are open tonight. If you want to call in, 877-996-2556. If you have something on your mind. Ray McGovern was a guest on Democracy Now, I think yesterday. And I have a little bit here of what he said about America's role in Ukraine, what's happening there. He says, who's provoking this unrest? Ray McGovern is saying that. We have incredible evidence. I think he meant credible. And this is a Rush transcript, so it was probably credible. We have credible evidence based on intercepted telephone conversation. Remember that? Victoria Nuland's talk to the ambassador of Ukraine. And remember when that transcript was released and the U.S. government went just all ape doo-doo because the Russians had monitored a private phone call. Oh, my God. Anyway, McGovern says, and who's speaking? Well, it's the Assistant Secretary for European Affairs, Victoria Nuland, a Bush holdover, by the way, talking to the ambassador, our ambassador in Kiev. And what she's saying, and McGovern says, I'll just read one sentence. Yats, that's Yatsenyuk. That's his nickname, I guess. Yats. Remember how Bush used to give everybody a nickname? Victoria Nuland is saying, Yats, he's the guy. He's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know? End quote. And as McGovern says, I guess that's opposed to the guy who doesn't know. And guess what? A few weeks after that, Yatsenyuk has become the interim prime minister of the Ukraine. Well, McGovern says, if I were a Russian, I would look at that and say, who's responsible for a lot of this? Let me think. McGovern says, and when you have 65, count them, 65 projects in the Ukraine, American projects funded with $100 million. If I were a Russian, I would say, looks like they're trying to do with the Ukraine what they did to the rest of Eastern Europe, what the U.S. pledged not to do. And that is to pluck these countries off one by one and have them join not just the European Economic Community, but also NATO. And the Russians aren't going to stand for that. And you know, the people advising Obama, McGovern says, might have warned him that you go a bridge too far when you threaten a strategic interest of the Russians. An interest that the Russians consider so sensitive as Ukraine or Crimea or their naval base, in, what is it, Sevastopol in Crimea. So, Ray McGovern weighing in on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, and you certainly don't have to be an expert in international affairs to understand what the goal and aim of the United States has been ever since the, especially since the breakup of the old Soviet Union. Now, we got other things to talk about tonight, which I will get to, but I do think we ought to talk about this a bit. If you have a comment, you know the phone number. Call us. One of the projects or one of the areas of investigation by our intelligence agencies, I'm not sure which one, Chrysler, so many of them, is to the psychological aspects of foreign leaders. What are they thinking? Why are they thinking what they're thinking? How does that thinking lead them to certain actions? You know, that sort of thing. Psychological profiles, it's kind of like mind reading. But we've become fairly good at this, I understand. Although it seems like it's never applied until, you know, post-event, such as what happened in Ukraine. So the BBC today, they posted their website. So what is Vladimir Putin thinking right now about Ukraine? What motivates his foreign policy moves? What are his objectives? Now, you don't hear about this, of course, in the American corporate media. They wouldn't even, first of all, the teabaggers would pick it outside and say, what are you talking about that for? All right, here's what the BBC, how the BBC puts it. Duped by the West over and over again. One thing that makes Vladimir Putin mad is the feeling that he is being deceived. We saw that with Libya in 2011. Moscow was persuaded not to block a UN Security Council resolution on a no-fly zone to protect civilians. Remember that? But NATO's military action after getting that Security Council resolution led to regime change and the death of Muammar Gaddafi, far beyond what Russia had expected. Now, that helps explain why Russia has been quick to veto resolutions on Syria. You know, fool me once, shame on the who, or whatever the hell it was. On Ukraine, Putin feels the West has tricked him there, too. Last month, he sent his envoy to Kiev to take part in negotiations on a compromise agreement between President Viktor Yanukovych and the Ukrainian opposition. The deal that was put together by foreign ministers from Germany, France, and Poland envisioned early elections, constitutional reform, and a national unity government. Now, Russia's representative did not sign the deal, but the Russians appeared to accept it as the best solution in a bad situation. But it stayed words only. Nobody signed anything. And less than 24 hours later, Yanukovych was on the run. The parliament removed him from power, appointed a new acting president from the opposition, and the pace of those events took Moscow apparently totally by surprise. The world, according to Vladimir Putin, is one in which Western powers are plotting night and day to destabilize Russia and him personally. Now, do you think he's paranoid for thinking that? No, neither do I. Neither do I. You know, I don't particularly care for Putin. I know the right wing in this country, especially Sarah Palin. I mean, Jesus, Sarah, why don't you be a little bit subtle in your absolute slavish admiration for this guy as compared to Barack Obama, right? I mean, it's embarrassing. Sarah Palin now is getting embarrassing. The overt hero worship. She's acting about Putin the way Sean Hannity acts about Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Same thing. But Putin really does believe that the world is plotting against him, trying to destabilize Russia and take him down, too. And he has good reason to think that. More on why he has good reason to think that when we come back. Stay with us. Yeah, Putin is very paranoid about the United States. I think that's one of the reasons, of course, that he does all the posturing, you know, the shirt off, the horseback riding. What does he do? Ride lions and wrestle giant octopuses or whatever he does. I think it's to kind of compensate for his real fear of the United States. Remember, how could you forget, Russia probably has more natural gas in its territory than everybody else on Earth put together, and not to mention rare earth and precious metals and all kinds of stuff, oil for decades. And let's not pretend, even for a moment, that the Western capitalist organizations would not love to get their talons and their fangs into Mother Russia. So Putin's paranoia, I think, is grounded in some very real reasons. You know, the right wing in this country has been anti-communist, and I have no respect for communism. To me, it's just another form of fascism. Communism, fascism, you know, all these isms, with one exception, and that's my belief in social democracy. You'll notice there's no ism there. Social democracy. But the right has been, you know, dragging and waving the bloody shirt since 1917 in this country, just constantly. That's the reason One Nation Under God was added to our Pledge of Allegiance back when I was a kid, because we were fighting, we were in a death match against godless communism as personified by the Soviet Union. Anyway, so Putin remembers the Rose Revolution in Georgia in 2003 and the Orange Revolution in Kiev in 2004. And of course, Russia, gee, I wonder where they get this idea. Russia suspects the West of planning both. If not planning them, certainly, you know, I mean, two words, Hugo Chavez. How many examples do we have to trot out? Well, we really don't. And more recently, as the BBC reports, the Kremlin accused the West of funding and fueling anti-government street protests in Moscow. Now, Putin, of course, I don't know if he's just being deviously ingenious. His alliance with the crazed Russian Orthodox Church. I mean, those people are just, you think Southern Baptists are bad? The Russian Orthodox Church, woohoo! But the Russian Orthodox Church all of a sudden has become more or less the state religion of Russia now, which satisfies a lot of the Slavic people who make up the general population of Russia, I guess. I don't know. But Putin has formed this kind of alliance with them. And I always get the feeling, I personally get the feeling that he's using them. And of course, they're using him in order to keep the proles subdued. Right? So, you know, I've got no great respect for Vladimir Putin at all. I think he's another Ted Cruz. You know, he's another Chris Christie. He's just another extreme right-wing thug. But his fears about the U.S. intervention, U.S. destabilization, are grounded in 120 years of U.S. history. The BBC says for months Russia has been accusing the U.S. and the European Union of meddling in Ukraine for geopolitical gains. On Tuesday, Putin said Viktor Yanukovych's refusal to sign an association agreement with the EU last autumn, quote, was simply used as an excuse to back opposition forces in their battle for power. It's not the first time our Western partners have done this in Ukraine, end quote. And then there's the question of NATO. In an interview with the newspaper Kommersant in 2010, Putin recalled how the alliance, NATO, had promised the USSR that it would not expand beyond its current boundaries, you know, before the USSR collapsed and the Warsaw Pact collapsed. You know, that was part of the deal. No, we're not going. Don't worry. Putin concluded, they deceived us, Europe and the United States. They deceived us in the rudest way. So, could the establishment in Kiev of a pro-Western government mean future NATO membership for Ukraine? Well, of course. Moscow would perceive that as a direct threat to its national security. And in the psycho world that we live in, who could blame him? Can you imagine if the United States' empire had collapsed the way the Soviet empire collapsed, and all of a sudden Putin was sending operatives to Ottawa to try to get the Canadians to sign on to the Warsaw Pact? Isn't that the same thing as what we have been doing to the former imprisoned peoples of the USSR? We'll be right back. I have some. Before the hour, coming to your phone calls here in just a second. Just want to finish this piece from the BBC, which attempts to understand what Putin might be thinking right now about Ukraine. Now, in the West, that would be Europe and the United States, of course, Canada, wherever else. When they talk about the West, I don't know, are they referring to South America? In the West, that would be Europe and United States and Canada, right? Do they ever mean Mexico? In the West, Moscow's intervention in Crimea has been denounced as brutal aggression. And of course, in Putin's mind, you can be assured that that is total hypocrisy, as we've talked about on this program. It should be total hypocrisy in the minds of any clear-thinking American. For the obvious reasons, but Putin never loses an opportunity to remind the world about what the U.S. has done in Iraq and down the list. In his speech to the Munich Security Conference 6 years, 7 years ago, Putin denounced what he saw as, quote, a unipolar world, end quote, a world where the United States was the single master. And he has been determined to defend what he sees as Russia's legitimate interests around the world, be they in Syria or Ukraine or wherever else. What's more, with much of Europe relying on Russian energy imports, oil, gas, yada, yada, and much of Europe benefiting from trade with Moscow, the Kremlin calculates that its opponents in the West will not have the stomach for a serious falling out over Russian muscle flexing. Now, enlightened self-interest usually trumps political determinism, wouldn't you think? Especially if you are in Europe and you have this really good thing going with the Ruskies. Energy! And the United States is trying to organize a boycott. What? You know, and I can just hear people like Angela Merkel or the French President Hollande or whoever else. Who's in Italy now? I don't think they have a government right now, do they? But can't you just hear them saying, what? You want us to do what? About Russia going into Crimea? Crimea is Russia. I mean, that would be... See, we don't know that stuff because we're way over here on Turtle Island. We have no idea. You know, Crimea? When did Russia or the Czars move into Crimea? I mean, how many hundreds of years ago? So I just don't see, except in a pro forma way, the governments of European, Western European countries getting their bloomers in a wad the way the right wing in this country has. And the right wing, of course, is everybody! Except you and me. So, Putin maintains he does not want to go to war with the Ukrainian people. He claims Russia's intervention is, his word, humanitarian, to protect people from, his word, chaos. Okay. We slaughtered hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq because they had weapons of mass destruction and were going to eliminate the Israelis, or worse, eliminate us. But as the BBC concludes, Russia's national interests will be paramount for Putin, ensuring the new government in Kiev cannot eject the Black Sea Fleet from Crimea, and that Ukraine's new leaders think twice before embracing the West and rejecting Russia. So, inside the mind of Vlad Putin, you don't have to like Putin or have any respect for the state capitalism, the oligarchs that moved in like a bunch of goddamn rats on a corpse when the Soviet Union came apart. You don't have to like them, their form of government. You don't have to like the oligarchs, which are just like the 0.1% in this country, only maybe worse. You don't have to like Putin or the Duma or their form of government or anything about it. No, nobody's asking that. What I'm saying is just we should maybe once, this will never happen, except perhaps on this little 35-cent radio program, but maybe we should try to put ourselves in the position of the Russians and try to understand. But no, I guess we can't do that because most of us Americans don't have a clue as to the mischief that we perpetrate around the planet. Most Americans, if you start talking about Vietnam, they will swear to you that we were defending the poor little helpless Vietnamese people in South Vietnam, not the North, against the corrosive power of communism. If you talk to them about Cuba, most Americans, they are absolutely convinced that Fidel Castro is and always has been a fanged, flesh-eating monster that just can't wait to tear into the soft underbelly of the United States and rip and tear. This is what we used to think about Daniel Ortega, too, right? Remember that? Remember all that? Daniel Ortega, this little isolated social justice movement in Nicaragua. And if we don't fight him in Managua, we're going to have to fight him in El Paso. Remember that? Remember that? Yeah, do you? Yeah. Panama. Manuel Noriega. Whoa! We got to go down there and get him. So most Americans haven't a clue. We know this. Haven't a clue. Stop tomorrow, just for the sheer meanness of doing this. Ask one of your friends. Ask it somebody at work. Ask it somebody in the coffee shop. Hey, do you remember what Mark Twain wrote about our action in the Philippines during the Spanish-American War and the aftermath when the Filipino people were trying to establish independence? And watch the blank look. Huh? Huh? What? Yeah? Hmm? So no, you don't have to like Putin. You don't have to like his twisted sense of government being this interplay and this snake-like twisting of Russian Orthodox religion and state capitalism. You don't have to respect any of that. You don't have to like it. You don't have to nothing. But is it ever possible for Americans to be seriously honest? And I already answered that and said no, because we have been denied the truth about our own history on the international stage, what we have done. You ask somebody, who was Jacobo Arbenz? Who was Mohammad Mossadegh? Who... yeah. I'll do that tomorrow. Ask somebody about Hugo Chavez. And see what sort of an answer you get. Now, it's the most fun to in doing that is to ask the right-wingers. Ask these brain-dead morons. You know some. I know some. Just ask them any of those questions about U.S. involvement in the internal affairs in terms of our destabilizing, undercutting, overthrowing, choosing new leaders, slaughter, butchery. Ask them about School of the Americas. Ask them about what happened in El Salvador in the 80s. Ask any of these questions, and what you will get is a blank stare at best. At worst, you'll get the kind of propaganda slop that Sean Hannity loves to eat and drink when he has his man crush, Oliver North, on. That's what you'll get. Hi. All right. We have a break here. And when we come back from this break, we will move on to your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to call in. Oh, and the conservative circle jerk is occurring in Oxon Hill, Maryland, just outside D.C. The Republic of the right-wingers, the baggers, they're all together. Did you see the pictures of Mitch McConnell coming out with an old flintlock? I think it was a flintlock rifle in his hand, holding it up. And someone tweeted, who was it that tweeted? Oh, yeah, the woman who was going to unseat him, Democrat Allison Grimes, tweeted out, "That's not the way to hold a gun. Kentucky women do it better." We'll be right back. Speeches to the wind, count the votes, then let him in. What you gonna do when the silence falls? See that cloud in the eastern sky. See that cloud in the eastern sky. Brighter than the brightest pearl, big enough to eat this.
Field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your
10 before the hour. Joan is in Minnesota listening on KTNF. Hi, Joan.
It's Joe.
Oh, Joe.
One of your favorite fans, the curly-haired old lady.
Oh, hi, curly-haired old lady.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for coming to Minneapolis the other week.
I loved it. Wonderful. I had a great time.
Wonderful. I have several things. First of all, you forgot the worst ism, the capitalism.
Yeah, that's true.
We're talking about isms. Secondly, let's see, where was I with this? I get so mad. I had it right in an order. I asked Kathy about a nice progressive station in Florida.
Uh-huh.
I have to go down and caregive my sister. She said there isn't any.
No, there aren't.
Thirdly, I guess the big thing is, Don's 84, I'm 82. We've got all these kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. And like you, we are just scared to death about what's happening to our country.
Mm-hmm.
And we think everybody has gone absolutely loony. I mean, I don't know what we're thinking. That, you know, we're going around saying that we're going to have sanctions on Russia and we're going to do this and going to do that. What in the world? What's wrong with us? And of course, we're led by McCain with his warmongering.
Well, we're
going to get the other guys convicted of anything because there's too much money behind them, you know.
Yeah, we're led by the corporatists, aren't we, Joan? I mean, they want, like I just said a few minutes ago, they would love to get their claws into Mother Russia.
Yeah, well, because it makes money for them.
Absolutely.
It's just so sickening. Well, God knows, we hope, whoever knows, we hope that we leave something for our children and our little ones. Honest to goodness. But I know what I was going to say. Have we been listening to you too long when we can finish your sentences? That was my... You sidetracked me with some of this other awful stuff.
Right.
I mean, we do. We know what you're going to say. Like, oh, Lord.
I know. It's
one of our 35 listeners, but we think we have more than that.
Yeah.
And we would give you money if we had it, but we spend it on those who are in need up here.
Yeah, well, you should do that, honestly.
Can I give a plug-in for the outreach that we've been doing for years, the two of us?
You certainly may, absolutely.
Okay, we've given over the reins now to our daughter and another member of church, but Don and I have been running a Thanksgiving Day free store for 20 years in Minneapolis.
Wow, a free store.
We give away warm clothing and underwear and socks and backpacks and personal care products. The last 2 years, it was over 700 people that we served.
Oh, my goodness.
Downtown Minneapolis. So anybody who wants these, we don't have any electronics at all. We are so illiterate. It's just alarming. We don't even have a computer.
No, but you'll stay.
The website for the Thanksgiving Day free store. Please do. There's a place to give money. We would love it because we serve so many people.
Without electronics, Joe, you'll remain sane for as long as you live. It's when you start getting the computers and the iPhones and the iPads and the this and the that and the other, you know, beep, beep, boom, beep, 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 beep. That's when you start to go crazy.
Today to put dollars on my little fold up phone.
Yeah.
And everybody in there looked at me like, what? What's wrong with this game? Oh, Lord, it's pretty funny. And all my 82-year-old Edina Darling Republican friends think I'm just goofy that we don't get a computer and all this good stuff. And we're happy as clams. So, yeah, no, plug our Thanksgiving Day free store for us.
Now, how do people find out about it in Minneapolis and St. Paul?
Well, anywhere. It's all over the country, the website. Don's sister found it in Florida.
And say it again. Say the name of it again.
ThanksgivingDayFreeStore.com? I don't know.
All right, just look up Thanksgiving Free Store.
It's a 501c3, so I suppose. How do I know?
I just put
in front of the other every day.
All right, okay.
Okay, darling, we love you, and you still can come up and sleep on the hide of bed.
Thanks, Joe.
The three of you. Okay.
All right, take
love
care. Take
we
care.
We love you. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. She is, yeah, I remember meeting her a couple of times that I've been in Minneapolis. Thanksgiving Free Store, is that what, yeah. Thanksgiving Free Store. Thanks, Joe. David is in, oh my God, you're in Kettering?
You know, I don't know how it happened. I just woke up here today. It was like, God is, well, there is no God, so what am I talking about?
So, when are you going to join the Abraham Lincoln Brigade and go fight for freedom and justice in Ukraine?
Well, you know, Mike, I'm 62. I got COPD.
Oh, well, never mind.
I got a bad back.
Okay. All right.
I'm a pacifist.
Okay.
So, anyway, I wasn't going to call, but... you know, the other night Sanchez was kind of disturbed because we didn't do an in-depth discussion of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I ran out of time.
I know, and the thing is, first off, it's really hard, even if you take all the sources that are available, to know what is going on.
I know, yeah.
And with the high level of propaganda over here, they really want to put that missile defense system in Czechoslovakia and Poland.
Right.
And that's their goal. And Obama's being weak because he won't spend money on that boondoggle.
Yeah, right.
You know, my mom used to work as a procurement officer that many years ago when Nixon was in there.
Hey, do you want to hold on a minute, David?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay, hold on while we do a break, and we will finish our chat when we come back. If you're on hold, stay with us. We will get to your phone call. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour, and we were talking with, I think it was David in, Kettering.
No, I'm in L.A. now.
Right.
I went there in my mind, Mike.
The break was not that long. All right, Ukraine.
Okay, well, back when my mom worked for the government as a procurement officer at the Defense Electronic Supply Center,
right,
they insisted on pushing through a government contract for a giant radar set up over in South Korea. And the problem was it was all repair parts for a radar that was never built.
Repair parts for radar that was never built.
Yes. So they were using these huge amounts of government money to kick back money to the South Korean premier at the time.
President?
Yeah, well, you know, dictator, basically. At that time, it was a South Korean dictator.
Park Sung-hee or somebody?
Yeah, and she got in a big fight with all her bosses because she didn't see the point. And then she wrote a bad letter about Nixon and got audited for the next 3 years. It was a lovely time.
Oh, I bet it was so much fun back then, right, David?
Yeah, she couldn't go out and march when Martin Luther King Jr. came here. So she sent us all out to march for her because they had a prohibiting of government employees participating in political activities.
Sure.
Those were the days.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, the Ukraine, that whole area there is just absolutely peppered with dead Russians, because they fought the Battle of Kursk, was right to the northeast of there. And I told Kathy the other night that Chernobyl's, they're like 35 miles to the north of Kiev, on the Dnieper, I believe it is.
Right.
So why would they have any reason to trust the Russian government? You know, they let them go for long enough to contaminate Kiev when the original explosion took place. They have abnormally high and epidemic rates, actually, of thyroid cancers.
Right.
Because the strontium and the cesium get absorbed by the body. Bone cancers. A lot of pediatric cancers. So now, I don't know what our deal is over there. I think we're trying to just stir the pot a little bit so the oil companies can keep their profits a little higher. that.
Well, that's usually the profit, money, capitalism is usually the motivating factor that sends our NGOs now, but it used to be our military, still is to some degree, in to see what they can stir up. And in the case of Russia, no matter what part of Russia you're talking about, I guess, except maybe downtown Moscow, it's oil and natural resources. Siberia is, it's supposed to be just absolutely chock-a-block with oil. And since the permafrost is melting anyway, and nobody really cares about that.
Well, you know, they think they can ameliorate the problems with global warming through failing lots of infrastructure, you know, to building dikes and pumping stations and stuff. I'm pretty sure they don't have a clue what they're facing, because all that cold air that came out of the Arctic this year was replaced by warm air from somewhere else.
Uh-oh.
So it would warm the Arctic in a time when it should be in its coldest and most locked-in state.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, there are warm air currents shooting across there at high velocity. And here we go, you know. It's, we hit 49 degrees today, Mike.
In Dayton?
Or yes, we're only 17 below normal.
Yeah.
But I'm expecting we're going to have an El Nino next year. That's what the climatologists are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So Ukraine will seem like a small problem on the horizon within the next...
Well, all of this stuff is really problems that I was bemoaning this the other night, you know, crying in my beer here about with the really major issues that are facing the human species, not to mention all the other species because of what we've done. I mean, we're not in this precarious position because of buffalo farts or because beavers build dams. We're in this position because of what the human species has done. And we should be addressing this on a global scale. And I may really address it. I'm not talking about these conferences where it's supposed to be about climate change or global climate realities, and nobody can even decide.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Kissinger and Lei Duc Tho were trying to conduct so-called peace talks in Paris, and they couldn't decide on the shape of the goddamn table.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. We have extinction issues at hand, and
but Mike, more important is what's Justin Bieber doing,
or what the neo Nazis are doing in Kiev, or how the Russians. You know, you can't trust the Russians, you can't trust the Americans, you can't trust the Brits. I think we can trust Canada.
No, the Harper's in charge up there. He's the...
Well, not Harper. We can't trust Harper, but I've always had the feeling that we could probably, since, you know, the Canadian government is lopped into, what, five different chunks? Isn't there, aren't there five? And I'm not counting the Maritime. I'm going to get all kinds of emails here.
Well, I don't know, Mike, because I was educated in the United States.
Well, that's true. Five or six major provinces, one of which is French. And I mean, you know, you got to, I have to trust a country where you have, it's bilingual. I mean, how can you not trust them, right? And they've never attacked anybody except us. So
we've had several wars with the Canadians.
Well, we did, but that's
we lost them all.
That was over beaver pelts, and
yeah.
You know, nobody cares anymore. All right, listen, I have to leave it there, David.
Right,
thanks for checking in. Take care, David. Yeah, the Canadians have never attacked anybody but us. I love it. And that's not even really true. Mark is in San Francisco. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. Haven't heard from you for a while. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I thought I'd give you a call about this bill that was voted down by the Republicans.
Oh, the veterans health care? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so you know these people like Hannity and these teabaggers that call themselves Americans?
Yeah.
You don't hear them talk about voting down, you know, a bill to help our veterans. They'll send them to war and let them die,
mm-hmm.
but they won't do a darn thing to help them, you know, and they call themselves Americans.
Well, that's what Republicans do. That's what they are told to do by their corporate owners, their overlords. You know, send young Americans, you know, jack them up on phony patriotism and send them off to get half their heads blown away. If you're lucky, the corporatists will tell you, all these high-powered, testosterone-filled little dudes will die. Or they'll come back all PTSD'd, out of control, just jack them up with drugs. They don't like the ones that come back with missing limbs and half their brain shot away, though, because they become a burden to the corporatists and the Republicans and the capitalists. They just don't like that. They like to send people to kill and be killed, but they don't like to take care of the broken bodies when they come back. You ever notice that?
Oh, yeah, I do, and I have a friend that was a Vietnam veteran. And he says the worst enemy to a veteran is a Republican Party.
Yeah.
He says, you know, that they basically, crap on them. They'll send them to war. In fact, the reason that bill didn't pass was the Republicans wanted to add an amendment that would have added sanctions against Iran to try to blow up that deal so they could go to war over there. Now, these people are sick. They really are.
I know.
You know what's really scary, Mike, is the people that vote for them. If you look at the people in North Carolina who are getting destroyed by the Republican Party, it's really amazing to see how many of them are going to vote for him again.
I know. Hey, hold on, Mark, will you?
Yeah.
All right, I got to do a break here. We'll come back and finish up. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. In San Francisco. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, we were talking about the fact that people are voting Republican and getting destroyed, and they keep voting for him. Another example is Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
You have Scott Walker there, and you have this Paul Ryan, who basically has blueprints to slice and dice the middle class up, and they send him back. It just amazes me that people just can't see how devastating and how ruthless and cold-hearted this party is, and actually a threat to this country because they want to go to war anytime they can.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
And, of course, the Democrats are not a whole lot better. We have an administration in place right now that is committing acts of terror and unlawful acts. It's just astonishing to me to hear what Kerry and Obama are saying about what's going on in Ukraine, about how it's this terrible violation of international law. When Kerry voted for the attack and slaughter in Iraq, he voted for it in 2002, the authorization, Obama sends drone strikes against into other nations' airspace and into their countries to blow people to pieces. Where our leaders find the absolute temerity to make these statements about the criminality of Vladimir Putin and the Russians, when what the hell, I mean, what have we been doing?
No, absolutely. And, you know, Mike, we know we went to war in Iraq for oil.
Sure.
And you know, you're right. I mean, I'm not saying the Democratic Party's that much better. I have my issues with them as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, to me, we have to cut off the head on the snake, and that's the Republicans. And yeah, we got to fix the Democratic Party. But you're right. I mean, they're not angels either, and we really don't have a right to say anything that Russia's doing because of what our actions were in Iraq and, mm-hmm. and the way that Bush and his administration led America into wars that we had no business being in. And so yeah. we really don't have a right to say that we, you know, we're on moral high ground to tell anybody what to do, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want to sound argumentative, however you say the word. I don't want to sound that way or be that way, but the Democratic Party, as far as I'm concerned, is as responsible for these effed up foreign policy adventures, as is the Republican Party. I don't draw a distinction between the two anymore. I really don't. I realize that around the fringes, there are still a few differences, not many, but a few differences in, at least in ideology between the Republicans and the Democrats. But as far as U.S. foreign policy is concerned, to me, they're interchangeable parts. It's just that the Republicans are hypocrites, whereas the Democrats, not so much. But they're still parties of war. They're parties of corporate America. And I don't see any difference anymore between the two. You know what I'm saying? I don't, Mark.
Well, you know what, Mike? I'm not going to argue with you. I agree with you. I just think one's worse than the, I think the Republicans are a little worse, especially on economic issues. More.
Well, yeah, if you want to start talking domestic politics, I do believe that Republican Party is filthier than the Democrats ever could be. But in terms of foreign policy, it's all one party.
I don't disagree. You know, Mike, the thing is, when you have a party that cuts food stamps and unemployment and refuses to make jobs, and basically blows up the bridge and says, cross it. It's unbelievable how anybody can vote for these people. You look at, like I said, North Carolina and Wisconsin.
What
do you have to do to those people before they finally get rid of them?
I don't either. All right. Thanks for checking in, Mark. I appreciate what you had to say.
Okay. Have a great night.
Okay. You too, sir. Take care. I just got this through the email machine. This is from Caracas. Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro has said his government was breaking diplomatic relations with Panama after Panama called a meeting of North and Latin American nations over protests in Caracas. As you know, there's been a lot of what's the word that they use in the news business? Unrest. Unrest. That's a term like when the police walk into an apartment and find six bodies butchered, and the news guy says, "The police suspect foul play." Foul play? Six corpses? Foul play? The protests that have been going on in Venezuela, that means I guess we're going to have to start trying to educate ourselves on what the CIA is doing to Nicolas Maduro. Venezuela has broken diplomatic relations with Panama. Oh, that's good news.
Try to put me down.
25 before the hour. A couple emails here from Prairie 2 regarding what we've been talking about. This first one, the subject line is false equivalency. Bruce writes, Obama does support democratic institutions and social infrastructure that Putin is systematically eliminating in Russia. Even if you believe that the United States has ulterior motives, the continued existence of such a social infrastructure does hold out hope for democratic reform. Contrast that with Bush in Iraq, where John Negroponte's death squads systematically eliminated the lawyers, the civil officials, the doctors, and the college professors. And under the subject of boycotts, Bruce writes, after the last time the Ruskies used natural gas to blackmail the European Union, the EU had been storing natural gas and building pipelines. The question is, can the EU hold out with stored gas and shipped in liquid natural gas from the U.S. and Middle East longer than Russia can operate before Russia's financial system collapses? Yeah, there's no question here. It's an interlocking house of horrors, what to do at this point. I was listening to MSNBC. Yes, I know, again today, listening on the radio, especially what's her name, the woman that's on early in the afternoon, drawing a blank. And her guests kept referring to or kept suggesting that we have to find the off-ramp. You know, I don't know how some of these phrases work their way into conversational American English. But talking about finding the off-ramp in this situation with Russia, Ukraine, and everybody else. Finding the off-ramp. I mean, oh, my God. Oh, well. Okay, back to phone calls here. Who do we have? Don is in Chattanooga, and he's listening through KTNF in Minneapolis. Hey, Don.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not bad. Are you familiar with the show Elementary?
Elementary? I don't think I am, no.
It's Thursday night on CBS. It's a Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it because we're working on Thursday nights.
Yeah,
but yeah, I know what you mean.
I DVR it.
Uh-huh.
But in one of the shows I watched, it had a great comment I thought you'd appreciate. The show is about hackers that were defending a hacker who had killed somebody.
Right.
One of their friends. And they were messing with Sherlock's internet. Watson, who's played by Lucy Liu, which is one of the reasons I watch it, says, well, these are basically anarchists. They're all supporters of Ayn Rand.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherlock looks at her and says, philosopher in chief to the intellectually bankrupt.
Yeah.
But what I call for is I really can't, put myself in politically in a party.
Mm-hmm. No. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing, Don.
But I do have a quote here that's quite old,
mm-hmm.
but it does make a lot of sense to me. I thought you might agree with it to an extent.
Okay.
When it shall be said, in any country in the world, my poor are happy, neither ignorance nor distress is to be found among them, my jails are empty of prisoners, my streets of beggars, the aged are not in want, the taxes are not oppressive, the rational world is my friend because I am a friend of its happiness. When these things can be said, then may the country boast its constitution and its government.
Hmm. Who said it?
Thomas Paine.
Ah.
Rights of Man. And that was in 1791. And I still haven't listened to him.
No. And given that, if one sees that as a template for, well, for the kind of society he's talking about, honestly and truthfully, Don, do you think that will ever come to pass?
I hate to say no, because I try to be an optimist.
Right. Well, yeah. But in to be a realist on this one, I'd like to be an optimist too. I hate all the negativity and the pessimistic crapola. But if we're realists, and you read the quote again, read it again if you don't mind.
Sure.
Go ahead. Read it again.
When it shall be said in any country in the world, my poor are happy, neither ignorance nor distress is to be found among them. My jails are empty of prisoners, my streets of beggars, the aged are not in want, the taxes are not oppressive, the rational world is my friend because I am a friend of its happiness. When these things can be said, then may the country boast its constitution and its government.
Can you think of, because I can't as you're reading that, one country in which rational thought, and I mean in the literal definition, rational thought is dominant in the political system? It's damn sure not the case here. It's damn sure not the case in Russia. It's damn sure not the case in just about any country that I can think of offhand. If they are not, if they're not swallowed up with religious crap, they're swallowed up with political insanity that, when it's really taken apart, is totally irrational. So that's why I say, do you ever foresee a time when there could be such a place? Because I think what you're describing, what Payne was describing, is a utopia.
Yeah, but he also says when that can be, then the Constitution has some validity.
Yeah.
That's also what he was saying. And since we're dealing with humans, I don't know if that will ever happen. And to me, the greatest evil in the mix is greed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even more so than religion, because religion also has basis in greed.
And fear.
Yeah. But fear is a technique for the elite in whatever group it is to enrich themselves. Again, greed.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'll get off so somebody else can get on. Keep it lit, Mike.
All right, Don, thanks. I'm glad you called in with that Thomas Paine quote. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, sir. Take care. Yeah, that's a good one. Steve is in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Is that, or Fond du Lac?
Yeah.
Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good. The reason I'm calling is I'm a little concerned about one of your thoughts about wanting the Republicans to win everything.
Mm-hmm. That is scary, isn't it?
The reason being, and I understand your reasoning.
Right.
But I don't think people are in a point where even that would be enough to cause the revolution. People are, you know, stuck working two, sometimes three jobs just to make ends meet.
Right.
And they're ignorant about what's going on around them.
Well, that's true. But my theory was that if Republicans controlled all three branches of government, it doesn't make any difference how many jobs we have to maintain in order to pay the bills. It would become readily apparent, not in theory, but in fact, that we were now living in a fascist state. Now, if that prompted a desire for change that was so strong that people would bring the change about, and they're not going to bring it about through the Democratic Party, that's hopeless. They would have to bring it about through some other sort of political organization. Then the fact of Republican control of everything ultimately would have been a good thing. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Okay. It makes a little more sense to me now.
Yeah, I hear what you say. It's very counterintuitive to hear somebody say, well, you know, let the Republicans win and let's get this over with. I wish that we had a Democratic Party that I could believe in anymore, and that most of the people I know who used to be or still are Democrats, that they could still believe in. With a basis to the party that was real progressive, social progressivism, and we don't have that anymore. So that's why I kind of let my frustration run wild. I guess you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm honestly a little young to even remember that.
Yeah, right.
I'm only sounds weird, but I'm only 40. So
yeah, well, it was
around in it.
Yeah, it was before that for sure. Steve, I got to leave there. Thank you. I hope you call in again. By the way.
Will do. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Excuse me, coming up next hour, just a little bit more, obviously, on Ukraine. As a matter of fact, I'll have some Tolstoy for you. And what the U.S. government is threatening to do to the Russians, which to me is pretty much insane, not bombing and strafing and drone striking, not yet anyway, but you know, all these threats of sanctions and visa suspensions, and Jesus God, I mean I have here in front of me a little piece out of the current issue of The Nation, and it's under the heading 21 years ago. They have these little bits in the Nation. Now, The Nation has completely changed its visual presentation, its graphics and everything. This is from 21 years ago. This is Chomsky speaking. The president advocates an unprecedented free trade deal backed by powerful corporate interests that will further erode the security of workers and the middle class, irreparably harm the environment, and undercut important financial, medical, and food safety regulations. Barack Obama and the TPP? yeah, but it also describes Bill Clinton and NAFTA, which went into effect just over 20 years ago in March of 1993. At the time, The Nation published something called Notes on NAFTA by Noam Chomsky, who argued that such agreements reflect what Adam Smith called, quote, the vile maxim of the masters of mankind, end quote, which is all for ourselves and nothing for other people. Uh-huh. Chomsky wrote at the time that agreements like NAFTA override the rights of workers, consumers, and the future generations who cannot vote in the market on environmental issues. They help keep the public in its place. These are not necessary features of such agreements, but they are natural consequences of the great successes of the past years in reducing democracy to empty forms, so that the vile maxim of the masters, all for ourselves, nothing for other people, can be pursued without undue interference, end quote, Noam Chomsky. And as the nation writes, the inevitable results of approving NAFTA, the nation editorialized later that year, would be, quote, to reduce the power of labor against ownership, to ravage the American industrial landscape, and to transform forever the dream of America as a just and prosperous place of hope, end quote. You talk about a blast from the past. And, of course, that was Clinton who signed off on it. And I know. A lot of people say, well, Malloy, it was a veto-proof bill. What the hell do you expect? This had been worked on for the previous two presidencies. Why do you blame Clinton? I blame Clinton because he was the executive. He could have at least stood up on his hind legs and said to the American people, I'm going to veto this, and here's why. But he didn't. So if you're a Clinton apologist, I don't want to hear it. Andy's in Redwood City, California. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. Hey, a little on the Ukraine. One of the last times I told Kathy, I spoke to my grandmother before she passed away. She was telling me about her childhood and how wonderful it was to take the goods from the farm, the produce that they made, and go to the big city of Lviv, Western Ukraine.
Right.
Tell them they called it Austria then.
Yeah. Part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire?
Exactly. And she told me how beautiful a city that was. Yeah, it's incredible. It's a very complex situation.
It is. And you know, my complaint here through all of this is the utter hypocrisy that's being displayed by the U.S. government where it concerns the sovereignty, you know, saying to Putin that he's violating international law, which he may well be. I don't know international law to that degree. But I do know that the United States took it upon itself to invade Iraq, the result of which was the slaughter of God knows how many people, and the slaughter continues. And that's the part. If you listen to this program at all, Andy, you know that it's the hypocrisy. I don't care if it's political hypocrisy, religious hypocrisy, economic. It's the hypocrisy that drives me to the wall.
It's off the Richter scale, Mike.
I know.
Doesn't even register, man. If you have any brains and know what's been going on the last dozen years or so, it just... It's incredible the words that come out of John Kerry's mouth.
Oh, my God.
And how he has turned into a neocon.
Oh, big time. And yet, the real neocons in this country are the ones that would claim to be only working in America's interest. They continue to insult him as though he's not doing exactly what they would do. But what the real neocons want, they want us to start bombing Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to send military force. They want the end. They want it to come. This is what I was talking about the other night. They want the population reduction. These are crazy people, Andy, who honestly believe that a nuclear exchange is somehow survivable. And I don't know. Drives me crazy. Andy, I got to get out of here. There's the music. Thanks for checking in, pal. I hope you call again. All right. Take care, Andy. Break time. We'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit more about Ukraine, so stick around. I would imagine by Monday we'll be talking about Venezuela, right? 7 past the hour. I don't know if the situation in Ukraine is all that important. You know what I mean. I don't think the U.S. and the USSR. Oh, it's not that anymore. It's just Russia. I don't think there'll be a nuclear exchange. And short of that, who cares? The United States doesn't care if the Russians move in and assist in the partitioning of Ukraine. Right? Why would we care? ...60% of the population of Crimea is Russian anyway, right? But you know what drives me absolutely insane? Listening today to the commentators. Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC was a classic example. She had Mike Rogers on, who is a teabag Republican, head of the House Intelligence Committee, and Andrea was trying to get an answer from Mike Rogers as to how, it always comes down to this, how could the U.S. intelligence community have missed whatever indicators were out there that the Russians were going to move into Crimea? Oh, and poor Mike Rogers, teabag freak that he is, sitting there giving his non-answers, answers that really are just kind of meaningless anyway. Again, what difference does it make? The writers at the Washington Post are referring to Putin in much the same way as the writers for Wall Street Journal or Fox or whoever, the hard right-wingers, who always use Hitler as an example at just the wrong time. I mean, it's amazing to me how the Nazi example is used, for the most part in this country, against people who are progressive, against people who are trying to make things better, not make things worse. And when there are groups or organizations or people or countries who are trying to make things better on a global stage or just working in their own interests, it's always the Hitler thing comes out. Where was the Washington Post using the Hitler analogy when Bush and Cheney invaded two countries? Well, especially Iraq. Where was the Sudetenland and Neville Chamberlain and all this other garbage now that's pouring out of American media? When Bush and Cheney decided to unilaterally attack, one of the things that was incredible to me was to hear Andrea Mitchell and Mike Rogers talking about the Russians' violation of international law by attacking or invading a sovereign country. I mean, they kept talking and talking and talking about it over and over again. And I'm sitting there listening to this thinking, this is really listening to people talk inside an insane asylum. Why did Andrea Mitchell not bring up international law where it concerned George W. Bush and Dick Cheney? And, of course, the most ridiculous part is that Crimea, you can make the argument, is part of Russia. You can make the argument that Ukraine is part of Russia. But up until 1957, Crimea was seen as, for a period of time, as part of Russia. Indigenous or native people there, people who were there before the czars, I guess, would argue with that statement. But It was, who was it, Khrushchev? Was it Khrushchev who gave away Crimea to Ukraine? That's what you do when you're a superpower. You can invade countries like the United States and Russia do. You can give chunks of territory away. You can do what Israel does and just say, no, I think I'll take this. Oh, you don't like it? Well, then we'll build a wall. You can do that sort of stuff. When you're a nuclear power, you can do any goddamn thing you want to do. And who's going to call you on it? Who's going to stop the North Koreans from continuing to develop their nuclear weaponry? Who's going to stop Pakistan and India from refining their nuclear arsenal? Who's going to stop France and Britain? Who's going to stop South Africa? Who's going to stop, you know, Brazil is working on a nuclear weapon. Who's active in stopping Brazil? But for the United States, any representative of the U.S. press or media to even mutter the words violation of international law where it concerns Russia's move into Crimea is either just a total hypocrite, which is true. I mean, that goes without saying. Or is so steeped in U.S. imperialism over and over and over again as to not even be able to tell the difference. Somebody tell me, please, not just rhetorically speaking, what is the difference between Russia invading Crimea, if you don't mind the word invading, and the United States attacking and occupying and destabilizing and destroying and murdering hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq? Somebody tell me the difference. There's considerable difference. But the difference is the restraint being showed by the Russians. Ooh, right? Did Iraq used to be part of the United States? No. Was Iraq a threat to the United States? No, not ever. Where did Iraq, when it had lethal weapons, get them? From the United States. Why? Because we were arming them to be a counterbalance against Iran. Uh-huh. So was Iraq populated with neo-fascists? No. Communists? No. Who then? Shiites and Sunnis and other Muslims. You know those questions. You know those answers. I mean, the whole thing is just, it stinks, doesn't it? It just totally, totally stinks. And the more the columnists at the Washington Post or the New York Times, David Brooks I'm referring to, or whomever, the more they talk about the criminal activity, the criminal action, the violation of international law by the Russians in their invasion of Crimea, the very same people who encouraged and supported the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the more these people talk, the more divorced from reality it becomes apparent to the rest of the world that the United States really is. Isn't that the truth? I mean, when you stop and think about it, and now, right in the middle of the European Union, well, we'll get to this when we come back.
In the USSR, been away so long I hardly knew the place. Gee, it's good
past the hour. So, just as it was, in a manner of speaking, the differences are monumental, but using a comparison here, just as millions of people, literally millions of people around the planet demonstrated against Bush and Cheney's bloodbath, invasion, occupation, and destruction of Iraq prior to their infamous shock and awe, which must have really, really gotten Dick Cheney hot. But prior to that, millions of people around the planet demonstrated in resistance to what Cheney and Bush were about to do to a whole population of people, arguably where civilization began, just smash and grab, just invade, bombs, destruction, death. And to what effect were those demonstrations conducted by millions of people around the planet? The effect was zero. The effect was the neocons in this country and the imperialists and the neo-fascists and you know, the usual gang laughed and chuckled and giggled and talked about, oh, the French, freedom fries! And the invasion went off as Cheney and Bush and the murderers that now run this country planned it. And what was the reaction? Well, just any day, pick up your newspaper, look at your television. Of course, television doesn't report a whole lot of it anymore. It's too embarrassing. Thousands upon thousands of people continue to be blown into bits of flesh and bone as a result in Iraq as a result of Cheney and Bush's invasion. And then we have the EU meeting. They were holding emergency talks in Brussels to reinforce support for the national government in Kiev and to look for ways to get Vladimir Putin to withdraw his troops, de-escalate the crisis in Ukraine, yada, yada, yada. Well, while that was going on, the pro-Russian authorities in Crimea pressed ahead today with their plans to break away from Ukraine and become part of Russia again. Now, earlier today, the 28-nation European Union announced measures to freeze the assets of the Russian-backed former president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych. Oh, we're going to take his money. That'll get him. And 17 of his closest aides and family members, holding them responsible for the embezzlement of state funds. Jesus H. Christ, are you kidding me? What about Dick Cheney and the companies, Halliburton? What about the companies that Dick Cheney and the rest of these right-wing devils ran and owned and the embezzlement? What about the flats of money in cash that were embezzled, stolen, defrauded as they made their way to Iraq? Anybody ever say anything about that? Has Cheney's bank account been impounded? Bush's? Colin Powell's? Anybody's? This is ridiculous. The Official Journal of the European Union, which is where you can find what that group decides, the Official Journal said, quote, all funds and economic resources belonging to, owned or held or controlled by Mr. Yanukovych and two of his sons and his associates on European Union soil shall be frozen. What about the assets owned by the American warmongers when we invaded and started our slaughter of Iraq? Were those funds frozen? No? I don't remember that. Were there economic sanctions placed against the United States? Now, that's a joke. I don't really mean that seriously, because we are the big mofo on the planet. Who's going to put economic sanctions against us? This is madness. This is just absolute insanity. In the meantime, we find out that our government has decided to escalate its response to Russia's military and economic threats to Ukraine. U.S. Today announced it has imposed visa bans on officials and others deemed responsible for actions that have undermined Ukraine's sovereignty and sovereignty and territorial integrity. Really? Who placed travel bans on Bush and Cheney and their cadre of mass killers when we invaded Iraq? Who did that? I don't remember anybody doing that. Do you? Before the hour. So, the U.S. continues to the Obama administration. I don't mean the U.S. I mean the Obama administration, the Republicans and the Democrats, who are exactly the same where it concerns something like this and so many other things. The political class, let's put it that way, in this country continues to escalate its response to what is happening in Ukraine. Today, the United States announced it has imposed visa bans on officials and others deemed responsible for actions that have undermined Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. This is the way the New York Times puts it. Really? Ukraine's sovereignty. How about Iraq's sovereignty and territorial integrity? Nah, that doesn't work, does it? The new sanctions announced by, I guess, Jay Carney or somebody in the Obama administration carried the threat of further steps. John Kerry, Secretary of State, met for a second day with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on ways to defuse the Ukraine crisis. One of the most serious East-West confrontations since the Cold War. Really? What about the U.S. invasion, occupation, and slaughter of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis? Well, where was the EU on that one? I remember the Russians were very upset. The Russian foreign minister, the Russian president, the Russian this, the Russian that. Do you remember back in 2003? Oh, you can't do that, United States. It's against international law. Really? It really is? It's against, oh, really? Okay, sue me. Millions of people were in the streets around the world. How many millions of people are in the streets around the world about the Russians retaking what they consider to be part of their country? Nah. Vladimir Lukin, Russia's human rights commissioner and a former ambassador to the United States, was quoted by Russia's Interfax news agency as saying this, quote, the U.S. has the right to impose all these restrictions on Russia. And we have the right, he said, to respond to it. But all that is, of course, not making me happy. Really? Really, Mr. Lukin? Jay Carney, our White House press secretary, said in a statement announcing the sanctions that the measure of imposing visa bans on Russians and Ukrainians, he said in a statement, Carney did, that the measure was particularly significant because the ban would apply to Russian as well as Ukrainian citizens who are, quote, responsible for or complicit in threatening the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine, end quote. Who imposed traffic or travel bans and visa bans on anybody in the United States? Up to and including, as Jay Carney puts it, anyone, Ukrainian citizen, Russian, as well as Ukrainian citizens, not just leadership. Oh, no. United States, you see, we are very goddamn definite about this kind of stuff. We can invade, slaughter, kill, drone strike, torture, destabilize, overthrow, and otherwise pollute everything with our munitions. We have a right to do that because we are a global military power. And if you don't like it, name the country, you can kiss our butts. We don't care. We'll do what we want. And if you do what you want, well, then we just won't let your people fly into the United States. Neener. How about that? This is madness. The new restrictions announced by Jay Carney, as imposed by the Obama administration, expand the visa bans that had already been imposed on those considered responsible for human rights abuses and political oppression in Ukraine in recent months. Human rights abuses. Do we do that? We support torture. The 10 top recipients of USAID, as I pointed out last night, torture, imprison without charge, beat, boil alive people they don't like. And we support it. We give them billions of dollars. So we had already imposed restrictions and visa bans and all sorts of stuff on those responsible, it says here, for human rights abuses. Who puts visa bans and travel bans and freezes the bank accounts of American officials who are responsible for not just torture as we see fit to torture people, but countries that we specifically give billions of dollars to in order to handle our extraordinary rendition? Don't you love that term? And handle our torture. Jesus God, this is insane. Oh, and there's more. In addition to the new restrictions, according to New York Times, President Obama also issued an executive order that provides the legal basis. See, it has come from an executive order for imposing additional sanctions on, quote, individuals and entities, end quote, who have undermined Ukraine's territorial integrity. Sounds like they're just repeating themselves. How many visa bans and travel bans and bank accounts do you have to seize using the same rationale and using the same explanation? Who did this to the United States when the United States decided to attack, bomb, strafe, set fire to, invade, murder, kill, destroy hundreds of thousands of Iraqi men, women, and yes, children? Who did that to us? I don't remember anybody, do you? The sanctions under this new Obama order could include freezing assets or preventing Americans from doing business with certain individuals. Ooh. when we attacked and slaughtered and murdered hundreds of thousands in Iraq, who was prevented, what countries prevented the United States business interests, the capitalists, the corporatists, from doing business in their countries? Anybody? I don't remember. Do you? In a statement from the Obama administration, probably delivered by Carney, I don't know, this. The executive order, quote, is a flexible tool that will allow us to sanction those who are most directly involved in destabilizing Ukraine. Destabilizing? What did we do in Iraq? Is Iraq destabilized? Man. The executive order to impose travel restrictions, visa restrictions, freeze bank accounts, and don't do business with them by the United States against Russians and Ukrainians, it says here, quote, is a flexible tool that will allow us to sanction those who are most directly involved in destabilizing Ukraine, including the military intervention in Crimea. And the White House statement added that this does not preclude further steps should the situation deteriorate. Man. I don't know. And then there's this part of the report. Russian business and finance circles have been nervous since Monday. Give me more vodka! Where is my barium? Unsure of what steps the United States and the European Union might take, said a former Kremlin advisor named Igor Yurgens, who now heads the Institute of Contemporary Development, a Moscow research organization. Mr. Yurgens said the text in the White House statement was so broad about what we're going to do to those Ruskies that it was unlikely to directly impact most major Russian businesses. In other words, we can ignore this. This is crazy. This is United States talking crazy. We'll just ignore. By the way, does anybody remember Iraq? Before the hour. And also, as put together by the New York Times, we're reminded of Leo Tolstoy, who was a young artillery officer in Imperial Russia's military during the Crimean War back in the 1850s. And he wrote a series of pieces called Sevastopol. Is that how you pronounce it? The city in Ukraine, Crimea, Sevastopol sketches. And he wrote about how a wounded Russian soldier whose leg had been amputated above the knee coped with agonizing pain. The character Tolstoy wrote about said, quote, the chief thing, Your Honor, is not to think. If you don't think, it is nothing much. It mostly all comes from thinking. End quote. Nobody in Crimea shows any sign of heeding that advice by the amputated soldier, don't think. Because according to this, nearly every other street in Sevastopol is named after a Russian general or a gruesome battle. The seafront in Sevastopol is, the seafront promenade is dominated by what's referred to as a monument to sunken ships. And the central square in the city is named after the Imperial Russian admiral who commanded forces against the French, the British, the Turks in the 19th century. And bombarded with reminders of the Crimean War, which involved a siege that went on for a year of the city by the Nazis. Or, I'm sorry, not the Crimean War. A siege of the city and World War II, and the city resisted Nazi forces until finally falling in July 1942. Sevastopol has never stopped thinking about its wartime losses. And, frankly, had never been able to cope with the amputation, if you will, carried out in 1954 by Nikita Khrushchev. That's when Khrushchev ordered the Crimea detached from the Russian Federation and transferred to the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. Now, at the time, of course, that didn't make a whole lot of difference because both Russia and Ukraine belonged to the Soviet Union. And when Ukraine became a separate, independent nation at the end of 1991, however, Sevastopol, the home of Russia's Black Sea Fleet since the 1700s, the people in Sevastopol began howling, yelling, no, culminating in the Crimean Parliament's decision today to hold a referendum coming up on March 16th on whether to break away from Ukraine and become formally part of Russia once again. Once again. You see? The Russians resisted in the attempts to take over Crimea because it is a warm water port. Well, sort of. But Crimea, Russia, resisted Britain, France, Turkey, Germany, and other countries over centuries, who all tried and failed to loosen Russia's grip on Crimea. A guide at the Crimean War Museum in Sevastopol said, she's quoted by the Times, quote, every stone and every tree in Sevastopol is drenched in blood with the bravery and courage of Russian soldiers. End quote. Oh, she added, quote, this is obviously Russia, not Ukraine. End quote. But complaints are heard frequently by Russian speakers, Russian people, that the school history textbooks in Ukraine were written under instructions from Ukrainian officials in Kiev, and they don't talk very much at all about Sevastopol's heroics, but focus instead on the deeds of Ukrainian nationalist fighters in the west of Ukraine. A lot of those people are viewed by Russians as traitors, not heroes. And for a number of years, apparently after 1991's collapse of the Soviet Union, the loudest voices calling for Crimea to return to Russia were Afghan war veterans, Russian Afghan war veterans, and fringe political groups. These were people who regularly called for a referendum on Crimea's status but got nowhere. And they were seen as crackpots, nostalgic for the old Soviet Union. Well, all that changed last month when the protesters in Kiev drove Yanukovych from power and Russian television, which is widely watched in Crimea, portrayed that ouster as a fascist coup. Meanwhile, back in this country, what are we doing? We are conveniently ignoring, not forgetting, you can't forget the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East, but we are conveniently setting aside our bloody assault on the territory and sovereignty and population of Iraq and making loud farting noises about how dare the Russians! Violation of international law! Violations of this! This is just total insanity. But you know what? Doesn't it make you glad to be an American that your brain can be so cleansed, so they think, of recent events that we perpetrated against an innocent civilian population, and that we can focus on those dirty Russians, huh? Eh? I'll see you tomorrow, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.